Yo, yo, what's going on, everyone? Welcome back to another episode of the Chow Codes podcast. This is episode number 10, and today I actually have a guest that is pretty exciting for me. It's a little different. It's not exactly the developer space, so I can't really call this the this.dev segment, but he did reach out to me through email, and this is going to be the first time that we're actually more so interacting other than our little small email thread. But he is a UI designer at ESPN, and he's kind of worked his way up from all these different, you know, companies, starting as an IT tech intern, and, you know, here he is now working for ESPN. So, Derek, and then how do you say your last name? Yepes?
Yeah, you know, you actually got it right.
Nice.
You know, a lot of people always call it like Yeeps or Yeepies.
Nah.
You know, so this is actually the first time. So I actually got it right.
Awesome. I should have asked beforehand, but Yepes, I got it right.
Yeah.
But Derek, welcome to the podcast, man. This is exciting.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you for allowing me to be on the show. Thank you.
For sure. Yeah. Your initial story that you emailed me with was super intriguing. So yeah. I knew I had to bring it on. And then just the different aspect of, because this podcast and generally my audience is more catered towards the developer side.
Yes.
So it's it'll be nice to kind of cater more towards the designer aspect. And then for me also is to see what work goes into that, because I'm not a designer by any means. So
yeah, for sure. Yeah.
So let's just get started with like kind of how you were introduced to that, because I saw that on your LinkedIn that you started as an IT tech intern, and I just so happened to be in IT as a help desk as well. So I wanted to touch on that and then see what that transition was like for you.
Yes. Well, it goes back. So let me start from the beginning. So how I originally like got into like the tech industry was in high school. I was really like a, how can I explain? Like, I wasn't like a super book smart person in high school. You know, I was just wanted to hang out with my friends and, you know, just goof around and stuff like that. And I remember there was a class in, I forgot, it was like a web design class that I took. And I actually took it by accident because I had to take an elective and all the electives I wanted to take were filled up. So that was the only one to take. So I ended up taking this class and I was introduced with, web design and, you know, just multimedia in general. And that kind of like sparked my interest. But then I didn't really pursue it, you know, going out of high school. I went to a community college in Naugatuck, Connecticut. It's in Waterbury, Connecticut, but I'm from Naugatuck. And I wanted to go into graphic design originally, but just how school was, I wasn't really focused in school. Like, I was more worried about my friends and hanging around and partying and stuff like that. So I kind of
the normal.
Yeah. The normal stuff, you know, just being a kid and, you know, living in the moment. So I dropped out of school and I got a job as a job coach where I worked with special needs kids. And, you know, that job in general was, you know, a great opportunity for me. Like, I learned so much, you know, just to learn about my, how to be caring, not just for myself, but for other people, and to look at life in a different perspective, right? And to value life, because, you know, some of, you know, the people I was working with, you know, they couldn't really do certain things that, you know, any of us could have done, you know? So just being in that field and helping them, trying to achieve what they want to achieve, was just really rewarding.
For sure.
Yeah. And then, but then I knew, like, going along in that career that it wasn't really sustainable. The pay of 14 wasn't really that great. And as much as I, you know, enjoyed that, I had to figure out something, you know, to move forward in my life in order to benefit myself and to benefit my future family. So, you know, I was looking to stuff like that would interest me. And that was like pretty much like the tech, you know, like I loved, you know, the internet, I loved, you know, the cell phone stuff and apps and stuff like that. But I didn't think I was smart enough to get into any of that type of stuff, right? I try to dabble into a lot of different things like web design as well and try to learn how to code and, you know, just experiencing different things in tech. So I try to expose myself into like IT stuff and try to learn about computers. And I remember I looked on Indeed and there was an IT apprenticeship. And I remember, like, I didn't have experience at all. You know, I didn't have nothing. I remember right. emailing the guy and like, listen, I know I have no experience. You know, I come from, you know, working for, you know, special needs kids and that type of field. And if you just give me a chance and just, you know, let me just be an apprentice, you know, I would soak it in, you know, you don't even have to pay me. And so they brought me in for like a week or like 2 weeks to like, you know, just get an understanding of it. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I enjoyed it in a way, but it kind of quickly realized that it wasn't really for me. In a sense that like, I did like computers, but I quickly realized like, I did not really like the sense of like actually fixing them and all that stuff that goes along with that. So
I can sympathize with that so well.
Yeah. So if you've noticed, like I was in that searching phase of trying to figure out who I am and what is right. my purpose. Right. So I remember, you know, going back to work and just really down on myself, like, you know, I don't know what I'm going to do with the rest of my life and stuff like that. And I had a client, his name was Brian Ball, and man, he was really a role model to me. You know, he used to always tell me, he's like, hey, you always talked about, you know, web design and you always watch videos, you know, why don't you try to go back into that? And, you know, I was like, you know, I probably should, you know, but I didn't know how to get into that, you know, again, you know, I learned how to code and I was learning HTML, CSS, but then when I was trying to learn JavaScript, it was just like brand new to me. You know, it was like mm-hmm. a foreign language. Right. And then I remember watching, I don't know, some YouTube channel, and they were talking about a boot camp. And they're talking about coding boot camps and UI, UX design boot camps. But all those boot camps, you know, they wanted you to quit your job and to go to like New York and live there for like 3 months and stuff like that. And it was so new at the time. This was probably like around, I want to say maybe like 2016. Maybe 2014-ish, I believe so. And, mm-hmm. you know, I thought they were like, you know, like scams. Like, how can you go into one of these programs for 3 months, learn everything, and then get a job, right?
Right.
And so I didn't really do that. And then I remember searching online, and then there was a program called Design Lab. And Design Lab was a online bootcamp that taught you everything about UI, UX design. And it was for 3 months. And what got me, you know, really like, you know what, maybe I should give it a try, was they said that if we don't find you a job within 6 months, then you can get your money back.
Oh.
You know, guaranteed. So I was like, you know what, this is a no-brainer, right? So,
right.
you know, I gave that a try and, you know, and worked my butt off. And, you know, that's pretty much how I got to where I am today. I know there's a lot that I just said, but...
I mean, it's relatable in the way, in the aspect that, you know, you're straight out of college. And, you know, I've talked about this on the podcast before, and I've talked about this, you know...
Sorry to interrupt. I didn't actually finish college. I dropped out, so I was a...
Oh, even better.
Yes.
Even better. But you're still in that, you know, age group, right? Like, where we're supposed to be out of college. Like, we're still young, in a sense. Like, I'm still in that age. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm only 23. So, like, figuring it out in that phase is very prevalent in, like, our minds.
Yeah.
That, you know, a lot of people who go and finish college, like, you know, they get their degrees, but is it something that they want to do for the rest of their lives?
Exactly.
Most of the time, not really, right? It's, they're going for degrees or these careers where they don't feel as fulfilled. And I'm not speaking for everybody. Obviously, there are the people that find their way through and are actually doing things that they love to do.
Yep.
But I feel like that percentage is higher where there are students and people who are doing things just because they need that piece of paper to kind of move on through.
Yeah. So. I don't know if that's how we grew up and that's what our parents told us, right? You know, your parents always told you that, you know, you need to get a degree. If you don't have a degree, then you're not going to be somebody in life, you know? So that was kind of
right
like in my brain a lot. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I thought like, you know, I didn't go to school, you know, what am I going to be, you know?
Exactly. Exactly.
And so that was kind of eating me up a lot too, is just trying to find that way to break that mold, right? To be that, unique person and try to become something without that, you know, degree or something like that. You get what I mean?
100%. Because I'm in that phase right now, and it's I've had that mindset, you know, instilled in me because of my upbringing and because of the parents. I mean, coming from an immigrant family, it's that's kind of what the goal was. You know, you come here and they work. Sorry for the language, but I mean, they work their ass off to do what they got, right? So it's what can he do to repay the favor? Go to college and get a degree and like do well, because that was supposedly the way to do it, right? And then, you know, coming midway through to college, I realized that I don't really know if I fit here in this in this mold. I don't know if this is the structure that I want or need. So what other avenues can I take, and what other you know, routes are available to me, or that I can create for myself to get that quote unquote successful thing branded next to my name? And I think that, you know, dropping out, depending, again, for those of you who are listening, it depends on the occupation you're going for. If you're going to be a doctor, lawyer, things like that, go to school. I'm not saying you should not go to school for that. But in terms of being a designer, being a developer, especially being a software developer, because that's my, that's what I'm more familiar with. I understand that, you know, we don't necessarily need the degree to become a developer. You know, you just need a will and a want, and that's really all you need. But yeah, that's kind of the mindset and the area you were in at that point. So I can definitely see, and it's justifiable as to why people jump around so much.
You know? And I always say, like, you know, my stepdad always told me in about like about life, he's like, you know, you may not need a degree in life, but you do need to educate yourself somehow, right?
100%.
Whether that's, you know, going to a trade school or just educating yourself in like books or seminars, you know, you always got to educate yourself. And just, you know, search yourself. You know, I used to be always down because at that time, like right now, I'm 29 years old, and, you know, I got, you know, into design when I was 26 years old. And through my whole 20s, you know, I was just trying to just search myself. I thought I should be here by the time I was 25 years old, right? I should be making this much. I should be having a house and a family. You know, and my stepdad always told me, like, you know, that's what it's about in your 20s, is to figure out who you are. You know, it's okay to, you know, bounce around to different, you know, industries or different jobs, because that's how you'll find where you're supposed to be.
Right, exactly. But that's also to say, that, you know, some people do find themselves early on in the 20s. That's not to say that, you know, you spend the whole 20s in general trying to find yourself. If you find yourself, that's great. And, you know, it does happen. And but that's the beautiful thing about the 20s, is that, yes, you have a prolonged amount of time to where you have a quote unquote journey to establish yourself.
Yeah, I agree. I agree.
100%. Yeah. So then now let's dig into, you just now been reintroduced to web design. So what's the transition now for you, and what was the process for you to get back into that space and then make that, you know, or start that career for yourself?
For as a UI designer and
in general?
Yeah. So like I said, it was pretty much just trying to, just to better myself. I knew that I was wanting to get in a field that was one, fulfilling, because where I was in working with special education, it was very fulfilling, but it just wasn't sustainable. So I was trying to look for something that had that fulfillment, but also was able to sustain myself. And, you know, I wanted something that was creative, and I knew I wanted to be in somewhere into tech. So that's why I tried to dabble into web design, trying to learn code, realized that that wasn't really for me. And then I figured out that there was another way to get into, you know, tech, and that's through design. And then, you know, when I discovered, you know, the design lab and the boot camps, it opened up my eyes, like, oh, maybe this is possible. So I remember before getting into that program, I would design every single day. I would watch videos and try to learn every, you know, nuance about design and try to practice design, like make fictitious websites or fictitious apps. just trying to get exposed and try to be ahead of everyone. Because I knew that, you know, like I said, I didn't have a degree in this, but I knew if I just worked my butt off, that it'll pay off in the long run. So that's what I did. And yeah, I mean, and that's how I got into, you know, and then after the program, you know, they were helping us trying to find a job. And I remember looking on, you know, trying to find, figure out a way how to break into it.
Right.
I would apply to a lot of different jobs and I'll get the same email, just, you know, rejection email.
Yes.
Left and right, you know. And they warned me to, like, don't worry about, like, in the boot camp, like, if you get rejections, you know, that's part of the process. Just keep applying.
Part of the game, yeah.
Yeah. So I try to take a different approach. So I was like, you know what? You know, I don't have any experience and how can I get experience? So I remember I went on AngelList.
Okay.
And I was looking at different startups and trying to see if maybe there was a way, like there's internships and stuff that I can break in and just get exposure. And I remember there was a startup called 24/7 Teach. And 24/7 Teach is a, you know, online platform that allows students to go on there to try to get tutors at any time, any time frame to learn. So I got accepted through that, which I was thrilled, man. I was like, oh my goodness, this is my first time actually, you know, working for someone, even though I'm not, it's an internship, but I'm getting exposure, right?
Right.
And, you know, they just, I did some basic stuff there, like, you know, website maintenance, you know, made some little graphics and stuff. And then, you know, after that program ended, I was like, okay, maybe now that I have some experience, maybe I can try to get, you know, a job as a junior, you know. And me, I did not care about, you know, how much they pay. I did not care about pretty much all that. I just wanted to just get exposure and learn as much as I can, right? Mm-hmm. Be a sponge. And I remember applying for a job called Patient Wisdom. And it's a startup here in Connecticut. And, you know, I think for them for allowing me to you know work with them for the time being as a apprentice. And it was me and another designer. So there's only two designers there. And I mean I learned a ton there. You know, I learned, you know, how to work with developers, you know, how to make their lives better and how to work with stakeholders and, you know, learn their needs and not just design just how I feel a design should be, but design for a business.
Right.
And so long story short, you know, that contract kind of ended and, yeah. So then after that, once that contract ended, I, you know, applied for Checkmate. Checkmate Digital is a startup and there, that's where I really learned so much about like the startup world, get exposure to different industries and stuff like that. And yeah, and then from there, I applied to ESPN and that's where I am right now.
That's a wild journey.
Like, yes.
I mean, it was just, and most of that happened in 1 year, I feel like. A lot of that growth happened in a year, which is, I mean, good for you. Like, that's awesome.
Yes.
In a single year, you were able to go from like small internship to contract work to a company like ESPN.
Yes. Like, and another thing too that I forgot to mention was prior to getting that job at Patient Wisdom, I was still working as a job coach. And I remember when I got that job offer, it was only a contract job. And that contract job, I remember they were telling me it's not guaranteed that you will work here permanently, but this is a great opportunity for you to get exposure. And I had a full-time job already. So I pretty much just took the risk, like not knowing if I'm going to get hired and just took that job.
Right.
And it paid off, you know, because I think if I never took that risk, I would have never been where I am right now. So.
Absolutely. And it's all about risk taking, especially being self-taught. You know, you see these small windows and small opportunities that come up and you almost kind of need to take that risk to propel yourself forward. So I couldn't agree more with like that kind of risk taking and that was a huge factor in it. But I mean, again, your journey in and of itself is pretty amazing as a designer. But I kind of want to backtrack a little bit because you did mention that in Checkmate, I believe it was Checkmate, that you were talking about how you are one of two designers.
So that was at Patient Wisdom.
Yes. I'm sorry. Yep. Patient Wisdom. And you were talking about how you were in the process of, you know, talking with developers and how you can make their lives easier. Mm-hmm. And, you know, our audience being mainly developers, I kind of want to dig into that because it'd be interesting to talk about, you know, as a self-taught dev, and, you know, I haven't worked as a developer yet. So I don't know what that workflow looks like. And I'm sure many other self-taught devs don't know either. So I kind of want to dig into that for you and ask about just, you know, what was that workflow like? What was the collaboration like? And how, as a designer, do you approach a developer and try to, you know, work out the kinks of a design when it comes to going from a wireframe over to actual code?
Yeah. So, you know, usually my process is one, I want to, if we're about to start a whole new feature and something and build it from the ground up, you know, I want to talk to a developer and know what we can and can't do just so that I can use that as I'm designing stuff. But I'm always in communication with a developer, you know, because I don't want to have any surprises, we've been designing this for a month and come to find out we can't even do it. Right. So I'm always in communication and trying to, hey, what do you think about this? You know, would this work? If not, you know, what can we do to make this work? I'm always in communication. And, you know, when it comes to for example, making their lives better, that's one way. But when it comes to handing over assets, you know, I always ask, because every developer, you know, they work differently. So I always try to understand how they prefer things. You know, if I'm handing over assets, how do you want that? You know, do you want me to just send you the file? Some just prefer, just give me your sketch file or your Figma file and then I'll do the rest. Some just want stuff to be annotated, you know, jot things down on how the flow is supposed to be. You know, I try to be as information as possible and try to provide as much information just so there's no slip ups.
That's interesting too, because, you know, for me and then I guess for other people as well, you know, there's this preconceived notion that designers just go out on a whim and go rogue essentially and just design these crazy designs and then plop it in front of the dev team and be like, okay, this is it. Let's make it. Right. So it's nice to know and interesting to get that insight that you go out on a limb and, you know, pre-establish a workflow that works for you and the developer, set not the restrictions, but kind of the limit to where, okay, these developers, they say we can't do this, this, and this. I won't make that. That just increases efficiency so much. And that's something that I didn't realize. So that's nice to know that there are designers out there that understand that there are things as a developer that we can't do that are too difficult. So you tend to scale that back a bit, because I do see some designs where it's like, oh my God, I don't know if I could do that. Is that even possible?
Yeah. And it wasn't always like that. I mean, when I first got in, you know, and worked at Patient Wisdom, you know, I'm still brand new. So I would design something and then I would just hand it off. And then when I got that, you know, backlash, hey, there's some things we can't do. You know, can we try to, you know, modify this so we can do this? And just getting that and learning, okay, I can't just design stuff and just say, here you go. You know, that's not going to work here, you know? So I have to, you know, balance, you know, I got to try to make everything work. Not in that sense, but try to make everyone happy in a way. Right.
Exactly. And, it's creating a flow in the team itself, because it's not just the designer team. It's not just the dev team. It's you guys are essentially one, you work under one roof. So you have to, you know, collaborate and create a system to where things flow in the right way and at the right speed so that you can push these features out at a good speed, but also make sure that these things are compatible with each other. Because as a dev, we worry about, you know, cross browser, security, things like this. So if we have to brute force something in a certain way and it's not by standard or it's, you know, it's not adhering to a certain, you know, design system that we have set in place, well, then that we need to backtrack, and then it kind of slows us down. And again, I don't have experience in that, but I know enough in the workflow to understand that that might be a bottleneck.
It's just like you know, like in a relationship, you know, you want to be, you got to be as communicated as possible, right?
For sure. Yeah, absolutely. And
that's,
I mean,
how I treat it.
that's such a like good perspective to take on it, because it initially to me it was just like, I don't want to, like, if I'm working with a designer, I don't want to think about a relationship with that,
Dude.
You know what I mean? But it's like, it kind of does feel that way. Like, you kind of have to make sure that there, it's a 50-50 kind of thing. Like, no one's right or wrong. Yep. You guys have to make ends meet. And, you know, if there are sacrifices that need to be made here, then they need to be made in order for things to click. Yep. So that's, it, in a weird way, yes, that I can see that analogy working. And it's not the route that I would have taken, but I think that it definitely does help when you think about it that way, because it's relatable to everybody, developer, designer, whatever you are, right? It's, if you think about it as a relationship or maybe just a friendship, right? Yep. It's a one-way street for the both of you. It's making sure that everything is flowing the way that it should be, and that you both are doing something that brings value to both of you. So that's like one of the big keys that I think is going to be a good takeaway for anybody, you know, regarding whether or not you're a designer or a developer. But yeah, that's super, again, that's relieving to know, because I just went in with it with like, I thought designers were just on their own. I knew that there was collaboration between devs and designers, but like, as a self-taught developer, I was always scared of the fact that, okay, there are going to be designers out there. They're going to design these things and I'm going to have to convert them from wireframe to code. I don't know if I'm up for that, because I've heard the stories. I've seen the designs on Dribbble. Like, these things are out of this world. So I don't know if I'm up to snuff. But that's, yeah. So I actually want to dig into that a little bit more. So like, what do you feel like were some of the biggest restrictions that you had as a designer when it came to working with developers? Because I'm kind of interested on, you know, what it was that you saw in terms of like a pattern that came with developers of what they could and couldn't do, or did it depend on the company that you worked for?
I would say, yeah, it depends on the company, right? It depends on, you know, what, you know, technologies that we have, how many developers we have on staff. So there's a lot, right? To, I don't know, but like,
it is a very broad question. So
Yeah, I don't know. Like, all I know is like when I designed on Dribbble, right? Dribbble, there's no barricades.
You
right?
have you freedom.
Just, yeah, you have freedom. So like, I'll design all these crazy stuff and these crazy interactions, and like, some of these crazy interactions are like, I know they probably wouldn't work in the real world.
And also there are things. There are things that you just instantly know when you design them that they wouldn't work.
Yeah, for sure. But I just go by standard practices in design and what works for the most part, and try not to go too crazy. And if I do try to go too crazy, like I do it in the beginning, right? Just try to see, you know, how far
they're willing to go. Yeah.
And then scale back.
Gotcha.
Like that. So, yeah.
Interesting. I'm just trying to dig into different insights. No. I mean, you did in a way, because I mean, that was just like me going a little bit too broad in the question, but it's just me trying to get more insight onto the designer side of things, because again, we don't see that, at least in my audience for the most part. I do have some designers, but not very many, right? But so I'm actually curious too, you or other designers that you've worked with have to understand code in order to like kind of get a feel for the designs that you're making, or is that not necessary at all?
You get it different you know, opinions on different sides, right? Some designers may say you may not need to learn how to code or to be a designer. Some say you should learn a little bit of code to understand. I'm on the fence that you should at least know at least the basics of least, you know, of web design to understand the limits and how everything is structured to be built. Because if you understand at least the structure of how things are built, then that would help you go a long way when it comes to designing stuff.
Right.
So, yeah.
Okay. And do you said that you've dabbled into a little bit of code too, right?
Yes.
So let's backtrack a little bit more too, because now I'm curious, because you are self-taught, right?
Yeah.
Aside from going to the boot camp.
Yep.
What's that process like for you? Because I want to kind of compare it to being a self-taught dev. What was it, you know, like choosing resources? Where did you find the resources? And then, you know, what was the process for you in terms of picking up on design and just like improving every day? Like, what was that process and journey like?
Oh, wow. So, yeah, that's a great question. So, I mean, a lot of my learning when it comes to like design and stuff and learning how to get better and stuff like that is a lot of it's from YouTube. I watch a lot of YouTube channels and stuff about web design and design in general. I follow a lot of designers on Twitter and Instagram, and you know, learn their perspective on design. You know, I check on Dribbble. I look at, you know, what are bigger companies doing and get an understanding of how they are handling certain things. And when it comes to just like practicing my skill and sharpening my sword in design sense, you know, I will try to design like fictitious websites and stuff that interest me, like e-commerce or like a sports app. Another thing I like to do sometimes is, and this is what I tell like new designers too, if they want to get into design, if they always ask, well, what would I do in order to get better? What would you recommend? I always tell designers that like, you should go on Dribbble, find a designer or design that you like, and copy it, right? And just understand, you know, how it's made, understand the different, you know, how elements are spaced out. Because when you do that, you know, you understand, like, how the design is made, and it kind of makes you, like, aware of, oh, so this is why they have the button spaced out away from, you know, this image, because it creates, you know, grouping and you know, in the design and sections and stuff like that. So that's pretty much
Yeah. And I mean, it relates, I mean, again, it's funny how much it relates to self-taught devs, right? It's, I was in the same boat, and not in the designer sense, but as the developer sense, was you obviously being on the front end side of things, we try to make websites, and in order to get some of that experience, you know, it would be me going on to Dribbble and trying to find a design that was not too difficult but simple enough for me to be like, okay, I'm gonna look at this, I'm gonna look, you know, maybe just do the landing page of this site that this person's designed, and then try to replicate that and do it on my own. And then it's interesting you touch on that perspective of once you actually copy it and do it, then you start to understand, you know, what goes into actually making it, why it was done a certain way along the way. Because, you know, sometimes as a self-taught dev, you kind of doubt yourself and then don't really fully understand why things are done the way that they're done, or why things are placed the way that they're placed. And as a front-end developer and as a designer too, probably, is you need to focus on those things. Because, for example, for an e-commerce site or, you know, some sort of business that's selling a service, things need to be placed and colored and just displayed in a certain way in order to increase sales, in order to increase subscriptions. So it's more to just design or the development side, but it's also the meaning behind why it's done the way it's done.
Yep. And I like how you brought up like the insecurity part of it, right? You know, the reason why I designed so much is to build, you know, my confidence in design, because like I didn't come from, you know, like I said, I have a design background. You know, I've learned this. I've been in the field for maybe like about four or five years now. So there is a lot of doubt. So in order for me to, you know, to get away from that is to design every day and to, you know, just better myself. Because if I keep designing, then it can remind myself like, hey, you know, you are good, you know, just stay the course, keep doing what you're doing. And, you know, you're just fine.
I actually love that too, because it's one, I didn't realize that I brought it up. Two, it's a specific, and I'm talking again specifically as a dev, and I'm sure you can relate this to all the other self-taught designers as well.
Yeah,
is, you know, imposter syndrome.
Yep.
And I'm sure designers go through it as well, like I said. But yeah, you know, it's interesting that you say in order to overcome that, you just kept doing things.
Yep.
And I don't think we talk about that enough, because in terms of imposter syndrome, we always try to reaffirm each other and be like, look, everyone goes through it. Mm-hmm. You know, even the best of us, you work at ESPN and you probably still do it, right? Like,
oh yeah,
the people that in our minds, quote unquote, have made it and are doing big things and seem like the senior people. And I'm talking in a broad sense,
yeah.
You know, from like the social media world, it's like you see all these people and it looks like they've made it. Their lives are all set. So as a consumer of that, you then in turn just start to feel, I mean, for lack of better words, like shitty about yourself, because you feel like you haven't done enough to do that. Yeah. And yep, it's, I don't think the method of actually going out and just building things and doing the things that you are already doing is even mentioned or talked about enough. Mm-hmm. Because that's just not a way that I mean, at least for me, that I found to cope with imposter syndrome.
Yes. Yes.
Like, yep. I think that's super important now that I'm going to start implementing, because I even hit those phases of where it's like, I look at all these websites and I'm like, oh my God, like I couldn't do all this stuff. So then it's that break time of when I'm not actually coding is when I fall into that. So it's super interesting to look back on and be like, okay, well, I'm about to hit this mood. Let me just get back to work and like grind and show myself that I have the confidence and skill, and am skilled enough to do these things.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And it's also too, like, you know, I only been in this field for about like 4 or 5 years. Right. So in a sense, like there's some self doubt, like, you know, am I a fraud? Like I only been here for so long. How am I where I am right now, you know, in design? And there's a lot of people that been doing design for way longer than me, you know, and you're always thinking to yourself, like, is somebody going to, you know, finally figure out that I'm a fraud and that, you know, hey, you're not a designer, you know? So
yeah,
that stuff is in your mind. And like I said, man, in order for me to try to combat that is just design and try to learn as much as possible.
Right.
Yeah.
I mean, that's super important. And that's going to be another key that I hope, you know, people understand, is you're more valuable than you think you are. So, you know, just keep putting in the work and putting your work out there, which I actually wanted to touch on was, aside from Dribbble, because I know that's like a main hub where designers and developers go for inspiration or to just put their work out. Mm-hmm. What was the process like for you, even getting jobs and things like that, for putting your own work out aside from, you know, company stuff?
Yeah. So, you know, I thank Design Lab a lot for that, because, you know, they're very big on when you graduate from Design Lab that you will have a portfolio to show. So part of our, you know, our final curriculum was to build a portfolio and then to put all the work that we did in Design Lab in that portfolio. So, you know, it was great in the sense that, you know, I had kind of like structure on how to approach finding a job. And it made things a whole lot easier in that sense. You know, I'm always big on, no matter if your portfolio is complete and you think it's done, there's always room for improvement. There's always room to grow that portfolio and to add new work. So I'm always trying to update it with, you know, recent work. And, you know, stuff like that, because you never know, you know, one day you may have to find another job and you always want to be prepared. So that's always in my mindset. So
absolutely. And I mean, I took a look at your portfolio or at least your website prior to you coming on. And I was just like, wait, some of the stuff is like crazy. Like the first one that caught my eye, and it's just because of what my interest was the Travis Scott project that you had. So I wanted to dig into that, because is that actually like something that you reached out to him for? Or is that something you just kind of did on your own?
You could say that. It's like, no. Yeah, so it was just a passion project.
Gotcha.
Yeah. So in my portfolio, I try to keep a mix. So I have a couple client work and some passion work on there. But yeah, Travis Scott was like 100% just a passion project that just randomly came in my head and was like, you know what? Let me just try to do a website on Travis Scott and just see where it goes. And you know, playing around a little bit of design, I was like, you know what? Let me try to further this even more. And
that's awesome. Piece. Yeah. Cause I mean, like, that's one hell of a main piece to put on your portfolio one.
Thank you.
I mean,
thank
that's
you.
The one that caught my eye. I was just like, oh my God. Like, if Travis ever saw this, I mean, he should pick this up. Cause like that was dope. But I mean, like realistically, all of your projects on there, regardless of being client work or not, like, is crazy. And the way that you put it out is like, I mean, I was just in shock initially. And then the Hobbs and Shaw one, like, yes. That one was crazy. For sure. But so to dig into some of the passion projects and things like that, like, before getting into ESPN and, you know, doing the things that you do now, what was that like journey like into ESPN? So like, did you feel like you did something particularly where, you know, that helped out, or something like that, you know what I mean?
Yeah. So, you know, how I got into ESPN, you know, I always wanted, that was probably one of my dream jobs to get into, was ESPN.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. So, you know, the reason why I wanted to go there, one, it was kind of close to where I'm from, and, you know, I love sports. So, you know, it's a dream. But, you know, I was previously at Checkmate Digital, and, you know, I love that company. You know, it was a great company. I probably would still be there to this day. Awesome people, learned so much. But at that time, this was around, I think, last summer, they got acquired. Another company bought them and, you know, gather all their clients and stuff like that. And we were in the midst of pretty much transitioning with them, but we still had to like interview for the new company and stuff like that. Which I get, I know, but, so at that time, I was like, you know what?
Since they're never easy.
Yeah. So I knew I had a window of opportunity. So I was like, you know what? Since I have this window, I might as well start applying to jobs that, you know, I always wanted to work at. So ESPN, applied. I went on their website and just applied, you know, like just a random application. And I was like, you know what? I was probably one, and, you know, I probably applied, and there was probably millions of other people that also applied.
Right.
So how can I stand out? So I remember going on LinkedIn, and I contacted a recruiter, and long story short, got a phone call with the recruiter, and then I went on the interview process, and yeah, it just happened. You know, I got on, interviewed, had like, I want to say one, two, maybe like four interviews.
Oh, and wow.
Yeah. Most interviews I ever had. One interview was like, I think about like, I want to say maybe like 4 or 5 hours long. Yeah. It was nerve wracking, but it was good. Got to learn a lot, learn about the company, learn about the people that I was going to work with. And then, yeah, long story short, I got the call that I got hired, and I was ecstatic, man. Dude,
I mean, I bet. I mean, I'm getting ecstatic, and I'm not even working there. Like, I'm like, ESPN. Because anybody that's a sports fan has to be super ecstatic to be working for them.
Oh yeah, yeah.
Like, you were about to say something though.
No.
Oh, okay. But yeah, like that. Can we dig into some of the work that you do there, or is that just kind of like?
I'm gonna dig into this with a little bit of the stuff, but
for sure, yeah. I know that there's gonna be some like private stuff that we can't talk about.
Yeah.
I mean, like, so far, and you started in November, yes. of 2019, which is, you know, close to around the time where I started development. So, I mean, what's it been like so far in the 9 months that you've been there? Like, that, again, it's your dream job, so I'm sure it's been crazy for you.
Yeah, I mean, it's different, right? Because I was so used to working at smaller company, like smaller startups.
I was going to say, you were at startups for the most part.
Yeah, and, you know, when you work at a startup, you know, you wear multiple hats. You know, you have to be a designer, you have to be, you know, a marketer. You know, there's a lot of different hats you have to wear. And when I went to ESPN, you know, I just pretty much did, you know, UI design stuff, you know, and didn't have to worry about all that other stuff, which was good, you know, a breath of fresh air and stuff like that.
Right.
And yeah, and also working with multiple designers, like there's tons of other designers.
Oh, I'm sure.
Yeah. And that also, that's a great thing because, you know, I can learn a lot and get great feedback on my work and stuff, which is good. But yeah.
Yeah. And then on the previous, so I just recorded a previous episode before this, and I actually got into with him, with Aral, was, you know, having all these people around you, it just invites so much collaboration. But to add on to collaboration is different perspective on different ideas. And as a designer, I feel like that's even more key than in the development scene, because you are the initial start. Like, you kickstart what the development process looks like. So being able to collaborate, and especially going from a company or a startup that only had you, two of you, including you, to now a full team at ESPN. Like, that must be like, I mean, it's night and day. There's got to be so much more innovation in that process. And I had a question, like, do you guys have, I'm sure you do, but it's like brainstorming, like creative tables and things like that, where you kind of go over some of these things, or is this a different process?
Yeah, for sure. So how the process we usually do is, like, you know, we'll work on, you know, one feature out of the app, and then we'll do like, we'll do that in like sprints, like a 2-week sprint. And then usually at the end of the sprint, we usually have like a demo day where we present the work that we're doing to all the designers on the team, as well as the project managers. And that's where, you know, everyone could, you know, time in and have their feedback and give feedback and stuff like that.
Right.
Which is good because, you know, you get a whole different perspective, not just from the design side, but from a product side, and stuff like that. So, and in terms of like brainstorm sessions, you know, we do that from time to time. Like, if there's like a big project going on, then we do try to set a time where we all get together and just brainstorm ideas, which is cool, man, because like you hear from different perspectives, and like, you know, there's so many smart people. And
I just
enjoy like being in a area where I know I'm not the smartest person in the room, but like just knowing all that and learning from other people, like I feel like that will help you grow in your career. I'm just like a sponge, man. I'm just soaking everything in, man. Just like a kid at a candy store, man. It's exciting, man.
No, for sure. And I can fully like empathize with that, because I love being in a room or just an environment where you're with like-minded people that love the same thing that you do, and then you get to share that interest with. Like, it's almost like, you know, going to hackathons for us. You're in a room where there are other developers, and you're all trying to do the same thing, but in a different way. And as a designer, you know, my personal interest is self-development. So I read a book where they went into creative tables and like brainstorming at Pixar, and, you know, listening to those stories and listening to the brainstorming process and how in depth they got in terms of, you know, how they set up those meetings and how they set up the structure to where everyone can really like chip in and, you know, say these different things to ultimately come to, you know, the movies that they put out or whatever that they do at Pixar, or whatever product they put out at Pixar. Right. So I can fully understand being engulfed in that environment. Like, I can't wait for the day where I'm hired on as a dev and I get to sit in those meetings. And all that being said, like, of course there will be a time where those meetings might become a drag or something like that. Right. But the feeling of being around like I said, like-minded people, and that we get to share the ideas and just like come to a conclusion to, you know, work towards an end product is like probably one of the best feelings that I can think of right now. Right.
It's
insane.
But
go ahead.
I was going to say, you know, it's a great feel whether you're in development or design. You know, there's always something to learn, and every day is different. And, you know, I enjoy waking up every morning knowing that, you know, I'm going to be working on something cool and something that, you know, potentially millions of people are going to see. Right. So it's like a fire, right?
That's going to be crazy. Are you allowed to say what team or product you're working on right now?
Yeah. So I'm working on the fantasy team on ESPN. Okay. Yes.
So like fantasy leagues?
The fantasy app. Yeah. Yep.
Oh, interesting. Like so you're football, NBA, all that?
Yep.
Wow. So you also probably have to dabble into like the mobile design too, no?
Yes.
Or is that a separate team?
No, that's all part of our team. So we do the web and the app as well. So it's a challenge, you know, trying to make sure stuff works, not just on the web, also on the app. So
that's crazy.
Yeah.
Oh my God. That's gotta be so much to juggle too, because I mean, in the dev scene, there's distributed teams for that, you know, there's the web team and then there's mobile. Mm-hmm. So on the designer aspect, do you separate that within the teams internally to like have, I don't know, like two people work on, like, just for example, I know it's not going to be two people, but like a certain group of people work on the mobile side where the other one works on the web, and then try to sync that up so that the designs are all like similar?
Not really. We don't really have like a dedicated team per se, but, you know, we just work on, you know, what needs to be worked on for the most part. And then just try to, you know, abide to the style guide that we have and stuff like that. So yeah, there's no really, it's team per se. We're all one. Gotcha. Team.
Yeah. That's crazy. Like I didn't know that, like as a designer that, you wouldn't have segmented teams, but that's interesting to know because you get full oversight of literally the full development cycle. Mm-hmm. Of both web and dev. Yep. So that's pretty cool.
Yeah. Sure.
Do you still dabble in side projects aside from work? I know it consumes a lot of your time now probably, but do you still try to make time for side projects now?
Oh yeah, I still try to. I'm always trying to just design and try to, you know, get better. I am starting to try to make UI kits and try to just see what comes out of that. So like I'm in the process right now, I'm trying to create one and hopefully try to upload it to any, you know, marketplace, stuff like that. So that's pretty much what I'm doing on the side for the most part.
That's awesome. That's awesome. The design world is so new to me that I couldn't even structure like really good questions. But I mean, I feel like I understand more so what the cycle is in terms of the dev designer relationship now.
Yeah.
To where, you know, it's a one team kind of deal, and that we shouldn't be looking at it as a multi team kind of deal, right?
I see it as, you know, we're all one family, you know, at the end of the day. You know, I don't know. You hear stories one side as, you know, developers don't want to work with designers. They hear designers don't want to work with developers. And I'm like, well, I don't understand why, you know, if we're just, you know, if we understand both scenarios, you know, I think, you know, we all come together, you know, which we are.
Exactly.
I mean. But you know what I mean. You just hear stories sometimes.
Oh, for sure. And I mean, there's memes that I see on Twitter about. Yeah. You know, designers doing these things and then developers like giving the backlash. So that was my initial like introduction to designers. I was like, oh, okay. I guess that's what it's going to be like once I get a job. You know, these designers are going to go crazy with it.
I'm going
to have to make this like roller coaster of a feature.
Yeah. I was the same way, you know, but you know, once you get into it, it's nothing like that, you know,
for sure. But yeah, so are there any, you know, closing things or any tips that you want to give to self-taught designers specifically that are coming up right now that are potentially listening, or really just anybody in general that are being self-taught right now?
Yep. I'll just say, just be curious, you know, keep always, you know, be willing to learn. Just work hard, you know, try to push yourself, right? You know, you can, I believe that, you know, you can achieve anything. If you just, you know, apply yourself and just believe in yourself, that's the most important thing. So, cause if I can do it, anyone can do it. You know, I was a, like I said, I was a class clown in school, you know, college dropout, you know, worried about partying and stuff like that. You know, the last thing that was on my mind is trying to figure out my future. But if you just buckle down and just focus, you know, you can achieve great things. So.
Yes, sir. I wholeheartedly agree. And then, you know, to everyone out there listening that's self-taught, you know, I always preach this, but the hard work pays off. And you need to understand that, you know, this is a long game and there's no right or wrong time for you to start. As long as you're starting now and as long as you keep doing it the next day, I think that you're going to be fine and you're going to be doing the right things and you're going to be doing things that you want to be doing. So it's everything that Derek said, and Derek's a good testament to that. It's putting in the work, and even in the process of finding yourself, it's staying the course. If you need to change it, but make sure you're still working. Right. And I think that's the main thing here. But Derek, thank you for coming onto the podcast for real. Like, this is my first guest that I don't have any prior knowledge or interaction with, aside from you like reaching out. So, I mean, this was kind of cool. This is definitely a learning experience for me, and like in terms of getting more in depth of the design aspect of things. So I think I'm going to be a lot more interested in that side now, and try to learn about that more on my own time for sure.
Thank you. Thank you for allowing me to be on here and at least, you know, tell my story. I hope I at least inspire someone, or, you know, because that's, you know, I just want to just, you know, make just better everybody, or, you know what I mean? And try to.
Of course.
I don't know if I'm going to go there.
I mean, I was talking about this with a previous guest, was the cool thing about this podcast right now that I've been noticing, and that's kind of like, I mean, it's super interesting, right? Is people's journeys are never the same. And that's the kind of the cool thing that I want to pull out of everybody is, you know, you listen to, I mean, I was talking to Jeff. Jeff's journey is very, very different from yours. Very, very different from Morgan's. Very, very different from Raul's. Everybody that I bring onto this podcast, no one will be the same, but there will always be at least a handful of people that listen. Hopefully at least, right? A handful of people, or at least just one, that can pull value out of this, relate somewhat to the journey, and then apply that to themselves so that they can come out of the journey on top. And I think that's the beautiful thing in this, is like, I allow people to come on and share what they've got. I'm going to ask the questions and, you know, just try to see what little nuggets or big pieces of knowledge that provide so much value. And I think that in your story, regardless of you being a designer and not really like, appealing is not the right word, but like, I mean, the main audience is developers. Regardless, I think that they still have value in this. Even if the end goal is a very different goal, we still have something to pull from your journey that we can still use. And they, even me, I mean, the big thing is that you're a college dropout, and so am I, and so is so many others. And you're a testament to showing that you can still make it to a high ordered establishment like ESPN without one. You know what I mean? So that's got to be inspirational in and of itself for anybody listening.
For sure.
But where can people find you at if they want to look you up?
Well, I don't really have much. I mean, you can follow me on Dribbble and stuff like that. You can look up Derek Yepes. My Instagram is also Derek Yepes. Don't really have the handle on the top of my head because pretty much the first time someone asked me where they could find me. yeah, I mean, that's pretty much it. I'm not really big or on social media too much, so that's why I don't have much to plug in.
Understood. But anyways, I will have all of Derek's links, his website, his portfolio, everything down in the show notes / description, depending on where you're listening to or where you're listening on right now. But that is episode 10. Thank you guys all for listening. I hope at least one of you can pull some sort of value out of this. If you guys want to hit me or Derek up, then you guys can do so. Sure. Like I said, I'll have both of our contact stuff down in the description or the show notes. But thank you guys again for listening to episode 10, and I will see you guys on the next episode. Peace out.